We're going to study from the Old Testament, Daniel chapter 5, which can be found on page 861 in the Church Bibles. Page 861. Belshazzar's Banquet. One night, King Belshazzar invited 1,000 noblemen to a great banquet, and they drank wine together. While they were drinking, Belshazzar gave orders to bring in the gold and silver cups and bowls which his father, Nebuchadnezzar, had carried off from the temple in Jerusalem. The king sent for them so that he, his noblemen, his wives, and his concubines could drink out of them. At once the gold cups and bowls were brought in, and they all drank wine out of them and praised gods made of gold, silver, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. Suddenly, a human hand appeared and began writing on the plaster wall of the palace, where the light from the lamps was shining most brightly. And the king saw the hand as it was writing. He turned pale and was so frightened that his knees began to shake. He shouted for someone to bring in the magicians, the wizards, and astrologers. When they came in, the king said to them, "Anyone who can read this writing and tell me what it means will be dressed in robes of royal purple, wear a gold chain of honor around his neck, and be the third in power in the kingdom." The royal advisers came forward, but none of them could read the writing or tell the king what it meant. In his distress, King Belshazzar grew even paler, and his noblemen had no idea what to do. The queen mother heard the noise made by the king and his noblemen and entered the banqueting hall. She said, "May your majesty live forever. Please do not be so disturbed and look so pale. There is a man in your kingdom who has the spirit of the holy gods in him. When your father was king, this man showed good sense, knowledge, and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father, made him chief of the fortune tellers, magicians, wizards, and astrologers. He has unusual ability and is wise and skillful in interpreting dreams, solving riddles, and explaining mysteries. So send for this man, Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar, and he will tell you what all this means." Daniel was brought at once into the king's presence, and the king said to him, "Are you Daniel, that Jewish exile whom my father the king brought here from Judah? I have heard that the spirit of the holy gods is in you, and that you are skillful and have knowledge and wisdom. The advisors and magicians were brought in to read this writing and tell me what it means, but they could not discover the meaning. Now I have heard that you can find hidden meanings and explain mysteries. If you can read this writing and tell me what it means, you will be dressed in robes of royal purple, wear a gold chain of honor round your neck, and be the third in power in the kingdom." Daniel replied, "Keep your gifts for yourself or give them to someone else. I will read for your majesty what has been written and tell you what it means. The supreme God made your father, Nebuchadnezzar, a great king and gave him dignity and majesty. He was so great that people of all nations, races, and languages were afraid of him and trembled. If he wanted to kill someone, he did. And if he wanted to keep someone alive, he did. He honored or disgraced anyone he wanted to. But because he became proud, stubborn, and cruel, he was removed from his royal throne and lost his place of honor. He was driven away from human society, and his mind became like that of an animal. He lived with wild donkeys, ate grass like an ox, and slept in the open air with nothing to protect him from the dew. Finally, he admitted that the Supreme God controls all human kingdoms and can give them to anyone he chooses. But you, his son, have not humbled yourself, even though you knew all this. You acted against the Lord of heaven and brought in the cups and bowls taken from his temple. You, your noblemen, your wives and your concubines drank wine out of them and praised gods made of gold, silver, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. Gods that cannot see or hear and that do not know anything. But you did not honor the God who determines whether you live or die and who controls everything you do. That is why God has sent the hand to write these words. This is what was written. Number. Number. Weight. Divisions. And this is what it means. Number. God has numbered the days of your kingdom and brought it to an end. Wait. You have been weighed on the scales and found to be too light. Divisions. Your kingdom is divided up and given to the Medes and Persians. Immediately Belshazzar ordered his servants to dress Daniel in a robe of royal purple and to hang a gold chain of honor round his neck. And he made him the third in power in the kingdom. That same night, Belshazzar, the king of Babylonia, was killed. And Darius, the Mede, who was then 62 years old, seized the royal power. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Thank you for reading that long reading. And the saying that we get from that chapter is? The saying that we get from that chapter? The writing on the wall. Yes. There's even, in fact, if I remember rightly, there's an episode of Yes, Prime Minister that has that as the title, The Writing on the Wall, meaning that something had been said and it was all over. So if you'd like to turn back to page 861, if we are actually to understand some of the references in here, I think it's good that we recap what's happened in Daniel chapters 1 to 4. In chapter 1, we see the Jewish nation taken captive and exiled to Babylon. And by the standards of his time, Nebuchadnezzar was quite an enlightened ruler, and he sets out to train some of the Jewish captives to actually enter into what would have been the equivalent of his civil service as administrators. And there we see Daniel and his three friends going through that process, a sort of university education. And there's a notable incident where they refuse the king's food, but they do that in a very diplomatic way. And at the end of that training, they are outstanding students. And Nebuchadnezzar reckons that they know 10 times more than any of his other wise men. And so Nebuchadnezzar has his first contact with four quite exceptional young men who believe in God. And then in chapter 2, we see that Nebuchadnezzar perhaps, although he's recognized that they are very knowledgeable and clever, hasn't really recognized their faith in God and not been influenced by them as much as he might have been. Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and because his wise men can't interpret it for him, he flies into a rage and he orders that they all be executed. And when Daniel and his friends, who presumably weren't there at the time and weren't asked, find out, they spend the night in prayer to God, and God gives Daniel the interpretation of the dream. And then Nebuchadnezzar makes the confession, "Your God is the greatest of all gods, the Lord over kings, and the one who reveals mysteries." He's come at least to recognize the God of Daniel as the greatest, but perhaps not as the only God. And his confession is in time forgotten. We have another instance in Daniel 3 where he constructs a huge golden statue and commands everyone to bow down to it. And this time it's Daniel's three friends who stand up and they refuse to bow down. They're thrown into the furnace, but it's not them that are burned to death, but those who throw them in, because Nebuchadnezzar has had the furnace made so hot. And they walk around in the fire unharmed. And as a result, the king praises them and their God, and he promotes them in his service. And he further goes on to command that everybody respect the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And in chapter 4, God, who has previously spoken indirectly to Nebuchadnezzar, perhaps in chapter 1, spoken directly to him in chapter 2, shaken him by that miracle of seeing men walking around in a furnace in chapter 3, then directly intervenes. And Nebuchadnezzar has this illness, which we nowadays call lycanthropy, whereby he behaves like an animal, even though he still has an internal recognition that he is not. But eventually, Nebuchadnezzar acknowledges God as God, and his kingdom is restored to him. And that's at the end of chapter 4. The beginning of chapter 5 is at least 23 years later. The current king is actually somebody called Nabonidus. Belshazzar, who's mentioned here, is probably his son, and he's probably ruling because his father is either ill or away. And that explains why later on he offers to make whoever interprets the dream the third in the kingdom, because Belshazzar himself is the second. But things have gone downhill in Babylon since the time of Nebuchadnezzar. Just imagine the scene. They know that the armies of the Medes and Persians are marching on Babylon. Babylon was a very fortified city. They had a river running through it. They could possibly have withstood a siege for a long time. And so they're overconfident. Nevertheless, Belshazzar takes an action that might remind us of Nero's behavior while Rome was burning. Instead of preparing to defend Babylon, he calls this great feast, and they had some huge halls. Imagine a hall that holds 1,000 noblemen. And they're there drinking themselves silly, quite frankly. And ordinarily, superstition might have prevented Belshazzar from asking for the goblets that had been taken from Israel. But in his drunken state, perhaps, that superstition is overcome and the vessels are brought out, and they're praising gods that don't move and can do nothing. And at this stage, it's almost as though God has had enough. Other passages in the Bible indicate that God is very patient with people, but they're also an indication that he won't strive forever with people who go and deliberately oppose him. And the example of Nebuchadnezzar himself shows that sometimes he does get tough with people. Now, the original language of Daniel 5 indicates that the message written by the fingers of a human hand is inscribed into the plaster wall in this great banqueting hall. And then the party understandably comes to an abrupt end. Belshazzar is visibly shaken, and wouldn't you be as well? And it's not just due to the supernatural event, which he obviously can't explain. I think it's also due to the fact that he realizes what he's done in desecrating the vessels that he'd ordered to be brought out for his noblemen to drink from. There's almost a sense of deja vu about the scene, if you recall Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 4, where he imagines that the whole world is at his feet because of who he is and not because God has decreed it. And of course, again, in a scene reminiscent of chapter 2, the royal advisors are all called, but they're helpless to explain the message of the writing on the wall. And in this case, this man Belshazzar has forgotten about Daniel. It's the queen mother, possibly the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar, who remembers him. And she reminds him of Daniel's proven wisdom in the time of Nebuchadnezzar. And it's interesting, too, that he actually uses his original Hebrew name as well as the name that actually was given to him by Nebuchadnezzar. It shows a certain respect and awe of the man. And then Daniel's brought in, and remember, he's an elderly man by this time, probably in his early 80s. And in typical Babylonian style, if you like, he's promised great riches if he can do what is asked of him. It's the sort of point that if this were a two-part television program, the credits would roll up and we'd all come back next week. The whole crowd of noblemen are hushed, waiting for Daniel's response. And his response and his whole tone is very different from the way that he spoke to Nebuchadnezzar. Even when he hears that dream that God has given him in chapter 4 and is horrified at what will happen to him, he had some kind of affection for Nebuchadnezzar, but he has none for Belshazzar. But I'm sure that also in the way that Daniel responds, he had God's heart in mind as well. And Belshazzar has shown that he's got no time for Daniel, and he's got really no time for God. He declines the rewards that are offered before he says anything else. He draws this comparison between Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar. And then he explains the writing on the wall. His days are numbered. He'd fallen short of God's standards, and his kingdom is to be divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. And then at the end of the chapter, we see Daniel's words fulfilled with the death of Belshazzar and Darius the Mede coming to be the new king. So there are four principal characters in this account: Belshazzar, God, Nebuchadnezzar, and Daniel. And I think we can learn something from each one of them in this episode. Firstly, if we consider Belshazzar, it's clear from what Daniel says to him that Belshazzar must have known about the time of Nebuchadnezzar. It's even possible that he may have lived through a part of it. He had the same opportunity that Nebuchadnezzar had to come to God, same opportunity to seek Daniel's counsel and wisdom. But in his final account, we see him stepping over the line from just ignoring God to active opposition and contempt when he abuses those drinking vessels. It's very doubtful that he sank to such depths overnight. It's more likely that he simply continued for years to ignore God, and his heart became hardened against him. And in Belshazzar's case, he seems to have ignored God in every aspect of his life. But I wonder this morning if the lesson is for us isn't that we examine ourselves and see if in some part of our lives we are ignoring God, refusing his call to witness to someone known to us, continuing to fence off a part of our lives against God, continuing to limit our response. And to be honest, I suppose that in fact must be true for all of us in one way or another, because none of us are perfect. And so Belshazzar is a warning to us to respond to God in the parts of our lives that perhaps we are not always ready to do. And then secondly, there's God. And from his dealings with Nebuchadnezzar, we have the other side of that coin almost. We see how patient God is, always eager to win our hearts, how he positions Daniel alongside Nebuchadnezzar to guide him. But we also see that he's tough when he needs to be. Even when we drift apart from God, when we forget our place in the scheme of things, God is forever working to win us back, as gently as he can. But if he has to be tough, he will be. He sends people into our lives at just the right time. And of course, he desires to use us to minister to other people as well. If necessary, he has the power and the will to intervene directly, as he did in the writing on the wall. But ultimately, he will not be mocked, as Belshazzar found to his cost. Perhaps even at that time, if he'd humbled himself before God, he would have been spared. But we should certainly be encouraged by the love that God has for each one of us this morning. And then thirdly, Nebuchadnezzar. What a contrast with Belshazzar. He was a man of his times. He certainly had his faults. But he seems to have respected learning, and within limits, he had a real concern for his subjects. Nebuchadnezzar would never have been thrown a banquet while there's a marauding army outside. His respect for other cultures and beliefs would never have allowed him to ask for those vessels to be brought in and for people to drink out of them and praise idols. He developed a huge respect for Daniel and his God. And although it didn't come easily, he eventually humbled himself and praised God. He struggled with pride, but he eventually overcame it. He allowed himself to be guided by others, by good men such as Daniel and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He didn't just surround himself with yes people, with people who said what he wanted to hear. And from him we can learn respect for others, to seek out wise counsel, to beware of our own pride before God, who has, after all, given us all the abilities that we have. And then finally, Daniel. Daniel is the one constant, understandably, and that's why the book bears his name, I suppose, the one constant throughout all the events of history recorded in chapters 1 to 6. Daniel himself, exiled to Babylon as a teenager, establishes himself at Nebuchadnezzar's court, not by cowing and towering, but by a bold allegiance to God. He survives through another four Babylonian rulers and into the reign of Darius the Mede. And he was certainly well past retirement age by then. And if we sneak a preview at chapter 6, we see that his work was still better than that of all the rest, and that he survived even the attentions of hungry lions. More importantly, his commitment to God remained a constant. Although he was clearly not always in the inner circle at Babylon and wasn't in Belshazzar's time, he's there, he's ready, he's waiting to be of service. How sad that Belshazzar calls him only at the suggestion of the Queen Mother, and only when the writing is already on the wall and the enemy is at the gate. Daniel's approach to Belshazzar is very different from his approach to Nebuchadnezzar. When he interprets Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 4, he is full of sadness at what is going to happen to him. When he speaks to Belshazzar, he is abrupt, casting aside the offer of rewards, and he seems to give the interpretation of the writing as though announcing a sentence. No doubt his closeness to God means that he reflects in many ways God's own feelings at that time. And from Daniel, we can learn to be constant in our faith and in our relationship with God. We are reminded that there may be mixed times, sometimes when we may be in favor and other times when we are not. But we need to be always ready to serve as Daniel served God. The closer we are to God, the more truly our behavior will reflect God's feelings to those around us and to the world around us. So in conclusion in this chapter, We are warned to respond to what God is saying to us. We are reminded of his great love for us. We are encouraged to learn respect for others, to seek wise counsel, and we are exhorted to be constant in our faith and stay close to God.